Welcome back, Truth Seekers. This is your Mike Malloy Show. No, I am not Mike Malloy. I'm Brad Friedman, your humble investigative journalist, blogger, troublemaker, muckraker, all-around swell fellow from bradblog.com. Sitting in for Mike for a couple more nights here. He'll be back on Monday, so you can look forward to that. Until then, you got me, and I got you. You can also have all of us in the chat room at bradblog.com. Go to the top item there. Click on through to the chat room. It's a very lively discussion, as ever. I haven't even mentioned, by the way, voting machines tonight. And here we got 4Earth sitting there in the chat room saying, quote, "I have been wishing that Anonymous would hack all the voting machines with all the votes going to all the Democrats to illustrate how hackable the machines are. It would only take one election, and every Republican would be screaming for paper and hand-counted paper ballots." Don't count on it, 4Earth. Just ask Alvin Green out there in South Carolina. Remember that? Nobody can explain that Democratic election, and everybody seems to be fine with it. Was it hacked by Anonymous or anybody else? Who knows? Who knows how a guy who had no... who was unemployed, who did no campaigning, who had no campaign, who had no money, how he suddenly won the nomination for U.S. Senate across the entire state of South Carolina. Oh, the entire state of South Carolina, by the way, uses 100% unverifiable touchscreens. But that's just a coincidence. Of course, afterwards, the Democrats swang into action to make sure that that would change. Oh, wait, no, they didn't. They're still voting on that same crap, and that's what they'll be voting on this November. Anyway, our phone number's here, 877-520-1150. Have I cheered you up yet? You can go to the chat room, I said that, at bradblog.com, and you can tweet me at TheBradBlog. That's my Twitter name, TheBradBlog. Okay, where are we here? Is that it? Can we go to... I was finishing up, actually. I don't know what happened to Justin Elliott there from ProPublica, but I do want to push you towards ProPublica.org's efforts, because while the Republicans are trying to block the requirement to put television stations' public records, the records that are already public files... for political ads and who bought all of those propaganda ads on their stations and everything. The Republicans are trying to block that, block the requirement by the FCC to put those files online, to scan them and put them online. Seems pretty simple, since they're already public anyway. Save me and you the trouble of walking down to the station. Anyway, ProPublica has an effort to help people go down to the stations and get those things scanned and put online anyway. So check out ProPublica.org, and I suspect we'll be talking even a little bit more about that in this segment coming up shortly with Sue Wilson. We'll also be joined by John Wellington Ennis in a little bit. And, oh, by the way, tomorrow night, former Bush scientist, science administrator Rick Piltz will join us. I should say Bush science administrator turned whistleblower, who I first interviewed back in 2005 when he blew the whistle on the fact that the Bush administration was removing references to global warming from their quote-unquote scientific documents. I haven't talked to Rick Piltz since 2005. So I'm looking forward to talking to him, seeing how it's going, because I know back in 2005 he was calling for other whistleblowers to step forward and resign and blow the whistle on what was going on inside the Bush administration. Want to see how that worked out. Did it? We'll find out. All right, Sue Wilson, that's tomorrow night on your Mike Malloy Show. Sue Wilson is a media activist, the director of Broadcast Blues, and a 22-year veteran of broadcast journalism. Her numerous awards include an Emmy, an AP, an RTND. Boy, look at all these awards. She's the editor of the media criticism blog SueWilsonReports.com, and more recently the founder of MediaActionCenter.net. Of course, most importantly, she's a frequent contributor to BradBlog.com. I'm sure that's her highest honor. Hey, Sue, welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show.
Hey, Brad, it's good to be with you.
Good to have you here. I appreciate it. And I don't know if you heard, we had hoped to talk to Justin Elliott about public files by TV stations. And I know that the Media Action Center has an effort to do exactly that when it comes to radio. But before we get to that effort, actually, I think it's part of the same effort. You had recently been up in Wisconsin prior to the recall election up there. You were talking to folks, showing them your film, Broadcast Blues, and you got a bunch of folks fired up in Wisconsin to take action and to make a difference. Give me a quick idea of what those folks did and what they learned in the process.
Well, you know, Brad, it does go kind of back to the public files.
Mm-hmm.
When I was back in Wisconsin touring 8 different cities in that state with Broadcast Blues, I was talking with people about the same issue you and I talk about all the time, that we, the people, own the local radio and the local TV airwaves. They belong to us,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yep.
And I said the biggest, best way you can prove this to yourself is going down to your local station and walking in the door saying, I want to see the public files.
Mm-hmm.
I said, okay, I'll bring you there tomorrow. So we did this. The people who came with me were just convinced we were going to get arrested. And, of course, not get arrested. We got, you know, ushered back to this file cabinet. But it was very interesting because we learned by looking at these files that the Democrats in the state of Wisconsin, and remember, they had an earlier recall election. They had a recall election last year.
Right.
And we were able to look at the files and find that the Democrats were buying all kinds of time on these conservative talk radio stations. There's two big stations, one owned by Clear Channel, one owned by Journal Communication.
Mm-hmm.
And what we discovered was that the Republicans weren't buying much time at all. And why, might you ask?
Why, might I ask?
Well, the 5 conservative talk radio stations in Milwaukee were giving free time to the Republicans, but they were charging Democrats for their time, okay?
Yes.
Well, so that spawned an idea.
Now, actually, they weren't giving free ad time, right? The Democrats, they were actually buying ads on these radio stations. The Republicans weren't buying ads because you say the free time that they were getting was not from ads, but from the shows themselves?
Absolutely. That's exactly right. You know, they would have the candidates as guests. They would have supporters of candidates as guests. You had a candidate named Alberta Darling who came out who won. She,
mm-hmm.
she shouldn't have won, but she squeaked by. And when she won, she completely credited talk radio with her victory. If not for conservative talk radio, I would never have won this election. And she was right.
Mm. So that's what one of the things that they saw. So what did these folks in Wisconsin start doing at that point?
Well, at that point, we started to talk about what could we do, and we came up with a scheme. Let's monitor during the Scott Walker recall election, which was only a 28-day election.
Right.
Let's just monitor the first couple weeks of the election and see how many minutes are these 5 local radio hosts giving to Scott Walker and the GOP and supporters of those candidates
mm-hmm.
versus how many minutes are they giving to the Democrats. And when we, and I literally had people with stopwatches listening to these 5 shows to find out how many minutes. We discovered that each of the 2 stations were giving about 80 minutes every single day to Scott Walker and about 2 minutes to Tom Barrett, the Democratic opponent. Now, to put that in monetary terms.
Well, hang on. Now, that's 80 minutes of talking about him, supporting him, or actually having him or one of his supporters on the air?
That was either having Scott Walker on the air
uh-huh.
or supporters on the air, but we narrowed it much further than that, okay? Because you might have a supporter on the air, and you might be talking about how well the Brewers did last night, okay? We were actually looking for comments like, Scott Walker is a Jedi. Scott Walker is the greatest governor we've ever had. Tom Barrett is a racist, okay? We were looking statements that were clearly in support or clearly bashing the other side.
Right.
We took that as a negative. It's the same mm-hmm. as positive for the Scott Walker side.
Okay.
So we clearly identified out of the 15 hours of conservative talk radio programming every day, about 160 minutes of those 15 hours were basically free ad for the GOP. And people don't think much about that when we think about minutes, but it adds up to if you're going to buy that time, And again, this goes back to public files. How did we come up with these numbers? We had to go back to the public files to figure out what they're charging for these ads.
Mm-hmm.
That's about $70,000 every single day that they were giving in free airtime to the GOP to promote those candidates.
Versus how much were they giving to the Democrats to promote their candidates?
Well, maybe $400, although even the 2 minutes...
Dollars? $400?
Yeah.
Okay.
And even that, the Tom Barrett, it was. I won't even go there. But yeah, so you know, talk about imbalance. Here's the really interesting part of this, though.
Mm-hmm.
There is an obscure FCC rule that I dusted off of the shelves.
Yep.
That says that if you're going to have a supporter of one candidate on the air, you've got to have supporters of the other candidate on the air. There's a trick to it. The supporters of the candidate who wants to be on. Let me back up. So, if a station wants to have supporters of Scott Walker on the air, they can do that. But if a supporter of Tom Barrett writes to the station within 7 days,
right,
and says, "I want to be on the air to support my candidate to get on these airways and talk
right.
about how good my guy is," they have to let you on the air. But of course, after our team in Wisconsin wrote many letters to WISN and WTMJ,
mm-hmm.
They were either ignored or they got letters back going, "No, we're not going to put you on there."
So they did actually try to send letters to get to request that the other side be put on in response. So they don't have to reach out, they don't have to invite them, but if the other side says, "Hey, I would like to have such and such on," then they must do that under this doctrine. And this is, by the way, I think the Zappel doctrine you're talking about, part of the Communications Act of 1934, correct?
This is the Zappel Doctrine. It's based on Section 315 of the Communications Act, which is if you have a candidate on, you must have equal time for the other candidate. Zappel was an FCC rule that expanded that rule to mm-hmm. say, and if you're going to have supporters of candidates on, you got to have supporters of the other candidate.
Okay, hold the thought. We're going to come back. We'll have just a few minutes with Sue Wilson. We'll get more on the Zappel Doctrine, more on what can be done, on what you can do, as they did in Wisconsin. Brad, in for Mike Malloy. Stay tuned. It can be proved, as alleged by Sue Wilson and the Media Action Center, that these Milwaukee radio stations consistently only interviewed or promoted a single candidate without ever providing airtime to his opponent. It is not only possible, but likely that the FCC would not apply the exception and would require equal time for the other candidates. The FCC rules on this matter may have a significant effect on the upcoming fall national and state elections, writes Stephen J.J. Weissman at Talkers.com. That's Talkers Magazine. It's an industry magazine, and they are anything, frankly, but lefty liberal pinkos. They noticed what Sue Wilson was up to. She wrote about it at bradblog.com again this week, and she is my guest here on The Mike Malloy Show. I'm Brad Friedman of bradblog.com. Okay, Sue, so we were talking about the Zappel Doctrine, this obscure sort of doctrine that has not been enforced for quite a while by the FCC that requires these stations, like those up in Wisconsin, in Milwaukee, that your people monitored to give equal time to both candidates if they request it, because, as you pointed out, they gave away for free some $70,000, is that per day, in ad time to Scott Walker for free?
Per day.
Every day. Every day versus $400 worth for the Democrats all over our public airwaves. All right, we've got just a few minutes left. What is being done? You've issued a complaint, I guess, with the FCC, and what can citizens do about this in their local at their local radio and TV stations?
Well, first of all, I want people to understand how really serious this is for the entire country. What we are doing is pitting the First Amendment rights of we the people against the First Amendment rights of the big media corporations. How many times do you hear these talkers go, "Well, we have First Amendment rights"? Well, so do we the people, and our rights are being violated. So we've made this complaint to the FCC, but here's our challenge. The FCC isn't sure they want to enforce the rule. They would prefer just to bury their head in the sand, I'm sure, and not have to stand up for the public interest. So what I'm asking people to do is to go to MediaActionCenter.net, read the complaint. I think it's a beautiful piece of work. There is a petition that you can sign there. We need to get many signatures on this petition that says to the FCC, we the people of these United States support this rule. We want parity on our public airwaves. It's critically important that we get a groundswell of support that says to the FCC, remember who you work for, FCC. You work for us.
And
you stand up for us.
And as Talker says, this could have a very serious effect come this fall. Now, you did very quickly in the minute or so we have left here, you've been encouraging people to go look at the public files at their local radio stations. Have you heard from people who have done that, and what have they found?
It is very interesting, and of course, we've been sponsoring public files inspections all over the country for several months now. What we find is that especially Clear Channel does not keep their public files up to date. They often will refuse people access. Their computers are so old that when you walk in to do a public files inspection, the computer won't turn on. They're purposely trying to keep information away from the public. But, you know, this whole idea of putting the information online, I love that idea. It makes it so accessible. At the same time, there is a beauty in getting two or three people and walking into a station and saying, we're here to see your files. There's a greater beauty in getting 10 people to go into that station to see the public files.
And now
25, like we did in Sacramento.
And now we know when they go and look at those files, they can copy those files, they can Xerox those files, and send them to ProPublica.org, and ProPublica.org will get them online, and maybe we the people can oversee our public airwaves. Sue, I got to run. I got a busy show tonight. I love what you're doing. Keep it up. Check Sue Wilson out at MediaActionCenter.net. Thanks, Sue.
Thanks, Brad.
All right. When we come back, John Wellington Ennis and some of your calls. Brad on Malloy.
Well, I won't back down. No, I won't back down. You can stand me up at the gates of hell, but I won't back down.
No,
gonna
I won't.
Stand my ground.
I certainly won't. Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com in for Mike. Mike Malloy, we'll get to your phones in a little bit here. We're going to talk to John Wellington Ennis, filmmaker, one of my favorite documentarians, I must say, momentarily. Our phone number is 877-520-1150. We're getting John on the line. He's got a new film out, Pay to Play. Well, it's not out yet. He's working on it, but we got the first 10 minutes, was unveiled at Netroots last weekend. We'll play a bit of that, and we'll talk to John in a moment. But first, real quick call from Sanchez out here in Los Angeles. Hey, Sanchez, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, sir.
Well, thank you, sir. I just wanted to back up what she was saying.
Sue Wilson, yes.
Yes, Sue Wilson was talking about visiting the studios. Mm-hmm. It's basically like another responsibility because they hold so much control because, in essence, they have the airwaves.
Mm-hmm.
And we visited one of the local radio stations there in town. Last time she came down, she did her presentation to the people at Occupy LA.
Mm-hmm.
And so separately, a few of us members of Occupy LA, along with Sue, and she had her camera. We visited this radio station. We went to the room where they had a computer that was probably so old it was probably a Commodore, and that's where the records. And again, backing up what Sue said,
yeah.
the records were only on paper, and they weren't current. I think they went up to 2004. So right there. That's something that she was able to take action on. So it is so important. I mean, I can't stress how important this is, particularly particularly when they have so much time, when we have so little time that we do this thing. It's like, it's so important to like visit a radio station, mm-hmm. and it is, believe me, trust me, Matt, it is so empowering. You walk out of there and you know that like, We've evened the playing field. At least we're keeping track of what they're doing.
I think that one of the issues is that the people generally don't understand, and the people, the citizens, the public, don't understand that the airwaves belong to us, and that
yes.
the radio stations are supposed to be serving, and the TV stations, the broadcast stations, are supposed to be serving in the public's interest. The airwaves don't belong to them. They don't belong to the big corporations. They belong to we, the people. So it's a really nice reminder of that when folks around the country go and visit those radio stations and be polite and be respectful, but ask to see the public files. And Sanchez, I'm glad you did that out here in L.A., and I hope people will continue to do it, whether it's here in L.A. or anywhere else across the country, because not only do the people not really understand that these are their airwaves, I am speaking to you on your airwaves. Your airwaves, not mine, not Clear Channels, not CBS, not to any of the, you know, Cumulus
exactly.
or ABC. It's the public's airwaves. So not only do the public not understand that, I think a lot of the radio stations forget that, and the corporations
right.
forget that. So this is a nice reminder, and we do find, as Sue Wilson pointed out, you know, when you look at those public files, you can see the amount of money that is being spent on those political ads, and you figure out things like why are the Democrats spending all this money on this station, and why are the right-wingers not spending any money on that station? Oh, because the right-wingers are getting free airtime. They don't need to buy ads on that station. They're getting
yeah.
free airtime that is worth, you know, $70,000. Versus the $400 a day that the Democrats were getting. At least that was the story up in Milwaukee in the middle of that election. Well, elections are now happening all across the country. This matters
mm-hmm.
everywhere. So
mm-hmm.
stay in touch with MediaActionCenter.net and ProPublica.org and radio stations like this and shows like this, Sanchez, to remind people exactly of that. Thank you, sir, for doing
Brad.
That and for all your good work. Keep it up, brother.
Okay, man. Thanks.
All right. We've got, do we have John? All right, we've got John. Well, you know what? Let me do this. Where's my, here we go. Before I go to John Wellington Ennis, the director of the upcoming documentary Pay to Play, Democracy's High Stakes. And before that, this is a follow-up to his previous film in 2008, Free for All, One Dude's Quest to Save Democracy, one of my favorite election integrity films. There's a lot of good ones out there. This is a great one. You can get that one at freeforall.tv. And by way of full disclosure, yes, I am in Free for All, but it's good anyway. Pay to Play is still being put together in time for release, hopefully before this fall's election. A 10-minute preview, or perhaps the first 10 minutes of the film, I'm not sure, were released at Netroots over the weekend. You can see them at Pay to Play. That's pay the number two play.tv. And we've got just a minute or two from the film, from the beginning part of the film, before we go to John Ennis. Let me welcome John. Maybe he needs to set this up. Hang on a sec. Hey, John, where we go? There we go. Hey, John, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, sir.
Thank you so much. I'm honored to be here.
All right, I haven't gotten to listen to your clip yet. Is there anything we need to know to set it up, or do we just let it roll for a moment?
I think you let it roll. I think it's pretty timely wherever I think it's jumping in.
All right, we'll play it, and we'll come back to you, John Wellington Ennis. This is from Pay to Play, Democracy's High Stakes.
If you think about it, it's like a racket. Our elections encourage stealing. I think of this as pay to play, because it's a second party's money being used. Ours. Politicians don't take money directly. The money goes into their re-election campaign. Maybe if campaigns didn't cost so much, elected leaders wouldn't become so beholden to their donors, and we could get the right people in office. The candidate with the most money wins over 90% of the time. That's not an election. That's an auction.
And the painful truth of the matter is that in America today, powerful people give campaign contributions to candidates for public office. They give them regularly as a business expense. We have a bought and sold political process.
We have a one-person, one-vote system, and they're trying to turn it into a $1, one vote. And that's plutocracy, not democracy.
There is a reason why we don't have single-payer, Medicare for all, national health care in America. The reason is that people have paid a lot of money to make sure that didn't happen. These are people who are paying politicians to make decisions to underfund our schools. These are people who are paying money to create results that are absolutely damaging to society. And that's what pay to play is. It's an ugly, ugly reality.
Ugly, ugly reality indeed. That is a short clip from from Pay to Play, Democracy's High Stakes, by John Wellington Ennis. And I believe I heard the voices there of John Nichols of Nation Magazine and Van Jones as well. Identify him correctly. Okay, John, what moved you to make this film? And is it, in essence, I sort of called it a follow-up to Free for All, One Dude's Quest to Save Democracy. Is it, in a sense, the next chapter to that film, so to speak?
Yeah, well, it's a pretty mighty quest, I'm finding out, and I don't think it's one of those things you can fit into one film.
I see.
So, so while I was in Ohio looking at how they were counting the ballots, if they were counting the ballots, I started to meet some inspiring people who would run for office around that same time, 2006, people like Paul Hackett,
right,
the Iraq War veteran who returned from Fallujah to run for Congress.
Mm-hmm.
And I was struck by, you know, all the obstacles that prevented people from getting on the ballot in the first place. And so, the idea of focusing on money in politics was definitely a driving force for me in the background while I was doing all this stuff for Free for All. And so, you know, what I think we've seen over the last couple of years has been, you know, that other arm of voter suppression rising, which is the big money in politics.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's not enough that, we have to fight against privatized elections and unviewable vote totals, but the amount of money being spent and not being allowed to spend. You spoke very well in this film on Citizens United. It really is a whole new world of misinformation that's affected the general populace now.
That's right. And I should say, for full disclosure, that you've interviewed me a few times for this film. I don't know if I make the cut, if I'll end up in the final version or not.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Brian's a character in it.
I'm a character in it?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay. Uh-oh. Now I'm concerned.
the
film actually starts out, and some folks may remember this from the darkest days of the Bush era, the whole, was it Tom Noe? Is that his name?
Yeah.
The Tom Noe scandal, Coingate, as they called it at the time, this guy who sort of bought his way into the Republican Party out there in Ohio into a position of power where he was then able to, take the state pensions and invest them in rare coins that then somehow suddenly disappeared?
Yeah, the Tom Noe Coingate scandal was such a fascinating parable to me, and that was one of the first things I gravitated towards in the whole thing, in the backdrop of the 2004 election, is because this guy was a huge Bush supporter,
mm-hmm,
and ultimately went to jail on conviction of laundering money into the Bush campaign and bringing in a bunch of other people to take money from him and,
mm-hmm,
donate it into the Bush campaign so he could up his status. And so, but it, attached to his, very typical sort of money and politics profile were all these ridiculous details, like the things he spent his money on, and, because he was such a political geek, he bought, he had the a Christmas card from JFK worth a couple hundred dollars, and yet a personal letter from Nixon worth like $17. So you had like, you know, these obscure things. But the idea that, you know, the investments of the Ohio Bureau of Workers' Comps was extended into Beanie Babies and collectibles like LeBron James jerseys,
right,
you know, pretty vilified now in Ohio, ironically, was part of the ludicrous that it's like, this will jump out to people. You know, you can hear a lot about stuff about the other forms of industry that will make up that sort of political influence. But what I love so much about him, though, is that he really rose from delivering money, you know, making his money from delivering newspapers as a kid to get his coin collection going. And then from there, just kept giving money to people. It didn't take that much, but he bundled people in northeast Ohio, uh-huh, to northwest Ohio to be able to have that kind of influence that, you know, normally you wouldn't get from Toledo. And so before you know it, he suddenly ingratiated himself to people like Karl Rove. And so he knows the vote totals that Karl said that he needed to get in different districts, which, you know.
And his wife, yeah, because his wife, as I recall, was also working on the election commission in, I can't remember the Ohio county, where I think she was like the chair of the election commission.
Lucas County.
In Lucas County, that's right. And so whether, I mean, I think it's all the same game here, whether it's a sort of a, in one sense, a small-time con, a short con with a guy like Tom Noe, who is, you know, trying to ingratiate himself into the Republican Party in this case, paying money to get there and then getting huge returns from it, whether it's a guy like Tom Noe or whether it's a huge corporation doing the same thing, it pays to pay off these politicians. It pays for a Sheldon Adelson, as we were talking about earlier in the show, to put money into these campaigns. They get it back in spades.
Absolutely.
When their guys get elected, right?
And I think the main difference between Tom Noe and a lot of these other instances is that Tom Noe went to jail. And I think if he had been a corporation, a lot of those things really wouldn't have been prosecutable in that same sense.
Yeah, he was one of the rare guys who went to jail. John, can you stick around for one more quick segment here?
Absolutely.
Okay, we're talking with John Wellington Ennis, filmmaker of the upcoming documentary Pay to Play, Democracy's High Stakes, and you can see that entire 10-minute opening, and it's really cool. Trust me, I love John's films. He's smart and he's funny, and they're exactly what this country needs to see. Go check that out at pay2play.tv. Pay2play.tv. All right, when we come back, some more with a few more minutes with John Ennis and your calls, 877-520-1150. These are your public airwaves. Use them. This is the Mike Malloy Show.
We're going to run to all on that day. Will I run to the rock? Please hide me around. Not true. Wanted a woman, never bargained for you. Lots of people talking, few of them know. Soul of a woman was created below.
Is Tony trying to send me a message with that? Dazed and confused. Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. Yes, Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com in for Mike, speaking with John Wellington Ennis, filmmaker of Free For All, One Dude's Quest to Save Democracy from 2008. Check that out at freeforall.tv. And the upcoming documentary, Pay to Play, Democracy's High Stakes. Oh, it's the world in the post-Citizens United era. And it should be really cool. I'm really looking forward to this one. John, we've got just a minute or two here. You have been making this film, I know, for a while, a couple of years now, because I've been interviewed a few times by you.
We're using seems, all of it, I promise.
No, that's not why I'm asking, although you're smart to do that. But it seems like in the sort of this post-Citizens United era that this whole thing is a bit of a moving target, that I suspect you're not making the same film now that you thought you were making when you started. You can tell me if I'm right or wrong there, but I'm just curious, what have you learned in the process of making this film that you did not know or that you did not expect when you went into it?
Well, in a sense, I'm telling the same story, the same parable of business and politics and getting a huge return and the cost at the public expense.
Mm-hmm.
But I've been fortunate that there's been such huge revelations since, 2010 and particularly in 2011 to give names and faces to some of these great giants that have been affecting these things, that we look at things differently now, but there's so many people who don't know about the Koch brothers or mm-hmm. Alec, and don't necessarily understand how partisan and bitter the Supreme Court could actually be as guys. People like to think of it as some supreme beings, and
yep.
Surprisingly, some hacks get in.
Sort of the emergence of certainly of Alec, the American Legislative Exchange Council, and the power of the Koch brothers. That was not there back in 2008, when you started thinking about this film. Those guys have emerged just over the past couple of years into the public.
Yes, and but it has helped me understand and be able to reinforce in my film the lesson of the different ways that people power has such an important lasting effect. And that's what I really try to illustrate in the film. And I do this in... not just in following the political discourse and protesters and activism around these issues, but also getting into storylines surrounding monopoly and the suppressed history of how it came to be in our popular culture.
The game monopoly. Right.
Yeah, it's endless. The dark.
Yeah.
Implications in the game and the history of the game. And at the same time, the emergence of political street art is a way to speak out against the monopoly of corporate speech surrounding us. And so, as I said, what I really was afforded besides revelations in this time was a lot more, different people who were getting out their story in some way. So in following people running for office firsthand in 2010, uh-huh. I was able to see what it really goes into it after Citizens United and, the implications of what we now know as the Super PAC era.
Very cool. Check this out at pay2play.tv, pay2play.tv. Can people support you there? Are you looking for donations?
Yeah,
I got 10 seconds here.
We're on a Kickstarter campaign right now. We actually have an art benefit tomorrow night in downtown L.A. We'll be showing some art and from the film, and we're also going to be showing that massive monopoly board that we unveiled at May Day that took over an entire intersection that shows our version of the pay-to-play system.
Go check out pay2play.tv to get details on that. John Wellington Ennis, thank you, brother.
Thank you, man.
More straight ahead on the Mike Malloy Show.